Blog Talk Radio.
Koda, Mojuba, Asheda, Mojuba, Aluwa, Mi, Apolabi, Pega, Mojuba, Araba, Mi, Adesanya, Awuyade, Mojuba, Ogute, Compound, Ode, Remo, Mojuba, Baba, Mojuba, Yeye, Mojuba, Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba, Egun, to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba, Egungun, to all the chiefs, Mojuba, Egungun, to all the Awos, Mojuba, Egungun, to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe-o.
Ashe, welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC, the United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights. We began the UAC after the unjust Zimmerman verdict, and this asshole had the nerve to publish a picture of Trayvon Martin's body over the weekend, evidently on Twitter. That's not a part of my normal introduction, but every time I mention his name, it actually, you know, I have a visceral response to that son of a bitch's name. He got away with murder, and, you know, karma's a bitch, and she never forgets. So pardon my language, but, you know, George Zimmerman sucks. Anyway, every Sunday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we invite you to be a part of our weekly conference call. The number to dial is area code 712-432-1500, and the access code is 220-981-POUND. Tonight is Tuesday, and we have Brother Joseph Malachi blessing us with his presence. So I'm going to go ahead and open Brother Joseph up, because this is going to be a probably less than 1 hour broadcast tonight. He and I both are tied up into some things on a boots on the ground level, him with his health industry and me just trying to make a difference in this river town that I live in called Cincinnati, Ohio. So I'm going to go ahead and open up Brother Malachi. Peace, Brother Malachi. How are you doing tonight?
Peace. I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
Ashe, I'm well, busy, running, but I'm good. That's a good thing.
Oh, yeah, that's always a good thing, to be busy and running around. I know exactly how you feel.
Ashe,
I just wanted to touch on the comment on George Zimmerman just for a quick second. Now, I had seen that this had been going around, you know, the picture of Trayvon Martin's body, laying in the grass. Is that a legit account of Zimmerman's? Is that his account, or is it somebody else running this account? Because I haven't looked too far into that.
Yeah, it's been on major media, which, you know, as reliable as mass media or, it can be. It has been broadcast on several quote-unquote reliable media sources. This took place. So, I mean, and you know, this whole thing about George Zimmerman just, you know, continues to, I guess, solidify the fact that we need people like you, like Brother Starr and others who, ISIS and, you know, others who support Sign of the Times, because, you know, that whole scenario inspired us to stay with this thing as long as we have. And although there have been other cases where people have basically been able to get away with murder, you know, as I said in the beginning of my statement, karma's a bitch and she never forgets. So it's just a matter of time before the full, I guess, reciprocity of how we've been treated for the past, you know, 400 years comes back to haunt the descendants of those who continue to inflict this type of injustice against us. So, you know, I haven't seen the exact Twitter post other than, you know, seeing it reposted, if you will, I do believe, just because of the nature of the beast, I could not put something like that past him.
Wow. Well, yeah, I mean, it's horrible that he would, you know, do what he did in the first place, first and foremost. No excuse for what he did. That was straight up murder, you know. I don't understand how he got away with that. Then again, I do understand how he got away with it, just due to the way that it is set up, especially Florida. Florida is a backwards place in my mind. But other than that, you know, him posting that is absolutely despicable. And one thing I will touch on that, I have seen comments on Facebook of people saying, when is somebody going to take him out? Have you seen any of these comments yourself?
Oh, yeah, and heard some of them personally just in conversation. I mean, people are still, you know, pretty upset that he was allowed to get away with what he got away with. It's probably going to be one of the people to take him out.
Yeah. See, when I see people commenting on Facebook, first of all, I believe Facebook is where you should, you know, definitely begin to curb yourself on some things that you say, just because, you know, we have the situation with the sister down in Georgia who, I guess, posted kill all cops or kill all white cops, and she had a picture of her with her gun, and they went and they arrested her and they're charging her with terroristic threats. So just my word to the my warning to the people, where I know that, you know, we're upset and it's not just the Trayvon Martins, but there's thousands and thousands upon other cases that have gone on like this or situations that have mm-hmm. happened like this. Be sure to be careful. Let me say this. If you want to say something and speak out against it and you're talking in a malicious way, a malicious manner that, you know, that they would take it, just use your words very, very wisely. And if it's something that's too graphic, keep it to yourself. And the best thing to do is talk about it amongst your community. That's what it, that's what the community is for. So you come together and you discuss these issues and you discuss these, you know, these things that are bothering you in a private setting. Because it would be, no one is any good to us locked up in jail. We can't anything done if they're going to start locking us up for words and for what we're typing on a Facebook status or what we're posting in a video. So it's not worth it to go to a drastic measure over on your social media account just to end up in jail. And they're gonna throw this book at you. They're gonna do something crazy, come up with something crazy to charge you with, and it'll affect you for your whole life for a 2 minute video on Facebook or a 3 line status. So just be careful, people. I know your anger. Take that anger that you have and begin to go back into the community and redirect your energy, and begin to make it a community so the police don't come into those neighborhoods and just pop in the people. And when you begin to look out for one another, that's when things will change. And that's just what I have to say about it. I don't want anyone getting in trouble for something that they type or that they put in the video, because that's just absurd. Especially if the person hasn't committed an act, or and they're locking people up for crimes not yet committed, or that crimes that won't be committed, because people venting.
That's right. And you know, as we talk about health, we have to look at the mental health of our young people. And one of the things that concerns me about what happened to Brother Trayvon and others since then is the mental well-being of our young people. I experienced a certain amount of concern after the 2001 riots here in Cincinnati. It was my opinion, and I went to other quote-unquote professionals in the school system at that time. I think I still had a lot of faith that the system, would work if the case or scenario was strong enough. And, you know, I pleaded with folks, you know, these young people need some sort of mental support, you know, as well as spiritual support, because they were dealing with a lot. And later on, the uprisings here happened in April, and then later that year, in September, was when 9/11 happened. And again, I made the plea to the school system and those who I was involved with and volunteering with, who quote-unquote had, you know, our urban children's best interest in mind. I pleaded with them again, like, get our children some help. Like, even if they choose not to come to a support session or a rap session, was what I wanted to call them, where they could just sit around in a circle and talk, you know, about how they were feeling and that kind of thing. And I don't know if it was because it was coming from me or if it was just a general non-concern for our babies, but nobody, you know, would help. Nobody would help at the school, nobody from our mental health board here in Cincinnati, nobody saw the urgency to get these children into some sort of, cleansing session, if you will, where they could really express, you know, how they felt about the murder of Timothy Thomas, who, you know, was the catalyst of the uprising here, or, you know, what happened with 9/11, how they felt about 9/11. And now those children are adults. And we're seeing a lot of violence in the street in Cincinnati, and I'm not saying that it's directly related to those two incidences, but I know that there are still children who are, well, young people who are locked up because they looted and took, you know, sodas and things like that from the street vendors, and they caught them on camera. There are still at least 3 people that I know of that are still locked up from stealing, you know, those kinds of things when the uprisings happen. And we can go into, you know, crowd influence and all that kind of stuff as a defense, but they never stood a chance. They never really had the type of, I guess, support that they so desperately needed. And me being only one person, I could only do so much. At that time, I had 127 girls in my Girl Scout troop. So I was pretty busy because, you know, I refused to tell anybody no that they couldn't join. So I had kindergartners to sixth graders all in the same troop. We went camping and everything. I mean, we did a lot of things together. But I can only do so much being one person. But, you know, now these people are grown with children of their own, even some of them. And, you know, this is the end result of what you get. So how is all of this violence being inflicted by the state going to affect the next generation? You know, and that's a real live concern for me. For one, for the backlash that it could cause in a reactionary way, and two, their faith in us as elders, as leaders, as those who, you know, supposedly have some sort of influence on the system. You know, what is that going to leave them an impression of us? Like, you know, how are they going to feel about us as elders in the community? Because, you know, in their minds, nobody's doing anything. Even those that are, you know, hitting the spotlight and mainstream media and things like that, they really don't represent the best interest. The majority of them really don't represent the best interest of the community. So, you know, I just, as we begin to talk about health, I would like to see us begin to address mental and spiritual health as well as physical, because it all, you know, coincides and works together and, you know, creates this marvelous machine we call the human body and creates a very positive environment, it could anyway, for our young people as well as for us. So with that, I yield back to you.
Oh, no, absolutely. I do agree with you. Mental health is not something that I feel that we discuss in large. It's not something that I discuss either with clients. And actually, we do, in my training, they do talk about the mental health of the clients. You know, if you don't have anyone to talk to or anything, you will eventually, like a powder keg, you will explode once lit. Yeah. But other than that, I do agree. I have nothing else to say on top of that. Absolutely. But what I wanted to talk about today, excuse me, while the bus passes by, CBS News just published an article, jumping right into it, and the title of the article is "The Surprising Discovery on Racial Disparities in Healthcare." Now, sit through this with me real quick. I just want to read it to you folks if you haven't seen it. It's at cbsnews.com, and you can /news/ when healthcare is equal, blacks fare better than whites. Do you hear that? You fare better than Europeans when you are healthy. All right, here we go. It's well established that in most health measures, African Americans have worse outcomes than whites. Study after study has shown that blacks are more likely to be diagnosed with health conditions like diabetes, high blood pressure, and asthma, and are also more likely to die from cancer, stroke, and heart disease. The disparities have been largely attributed to socioeconomic differences and unequal access to quality health care. Now, a study published this month in the American Heart Association journal Circulation suggests that if all patients get the same care, these health differences disappear. In fact, African Americans fare better than whites. Researchers made this discovery after analyzing records of 3.1 million patients from the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, a model system, they said, for providing equal health care for all. They recorded the mortality rate of more than 2.5 million whites and more than 547,000 blacks over an eight-year period. Most of the patients were men with an average age of 60. They found that the annual mortality rate for white men in the study was 31.9 per 1,000 compared to 22.5 per 1,000 black men. African Americans were also 37% less likely to develop heart disease, the leading cause of death in the United States, than whites. The research team controlled for other factors, including age, gender, income, education, blood pressure, medications, and body mass index. This is a quote I'm about to read. It is widely accepted that African Americans have a higher mortality rate and worse cardiovascular outcomes than the general population. A large part of this is attributable to socioeconomic deprivation, which includes, among others, lack of obtaining needed health care. Study author Dr. Kasaba Kovesity, director of the Clinical Outcomes and Clinical Trials Program in Nephrology at the University of Tennessee Health Science Center, told CBS News. Quotation, our findings suggest that a healthcare system without barriers to access like the VA system could dramatically improve health outcomes in minorities. I just want to touch on that real quick. There's about four or five more articles right there. The first thing I want to go back to about the, the first paragraph, the third sentence. It says the disparities have been largely attributed to socioeconomic differences and unequal access to health care. Socioeconomic, if you don't know what that is, basically it's your social economic status. So if you live in an area, let's say that's less fortunate than others, less, you know, for the sake of terms, you live in a less fortunate area, you're going to be in worse off health. Most of our neighborhoods that they have sort of, I don't want to say corralled us into, but when we move into the neighborhood, oftentimes, you know, people move out, the jobs move away, then the area goes down and the crime rate went up. Of course, outside factors definitely play a role into that. So one thing that we have to do is begin to build ourselves socioeconomically, not only to take care of, let's say, bills and things like that, but in order to take care of our health. They're basically saying you have to make money in order to be healthy, and that's not how it should be. Health is a natural human right, not a civil right. It's a human right. And that is one thing that, we're being denied based on social economic status. So that's one thing that really upsets me about the healthcare system here in the United States. Now, on top of that, let's go on to the other one. They list all these facts, and they let us know that if you take care of yourself, you live longer. And it's absolutely, I'm not surprised by it. Just the numbers that I just read over and went over in the article, they're telling you if you take care of yourself, you live longer than Europeans naturally without any diseases or anything like that. So my question is, why are we leading in so many diseases? You know, it says we're more likely to be diagnosed with diabetes, high blood pressure, asthma, and we're more likely to die from cancer, stroke, and heart disease. You know, some of these things may be hereditary, but if they are hereditary, that doesn't mean go and eat and not exercise or do the right things and just, you know, just it doesn't mean, excuse me, I just got tangled up with my words. If it's hereditary, you really need to watch your diet, because that means that if you don't watch your diet and you don't exercise, it'll just catch up to you earlier or something like that. But some of these diseases are chronic. Diabetes, type 2, exercise and diet. High blood pressure, watch your salt intake, exercise. Asthma is a tricky one to me. I had asthma when I was growing up. I used to be an inhaler boy. I was going for it every second. And when I couldn't breathe, I was going for it. By the time I was, 11 or 12, I had totally done away with it and continued along. And here I am, I'm 24 now, no inhaler. I work out, I run, I sprint, and my breathing is just fine. Other than that, the cancer, the stroke, and the heart disease, some cancers you can't, you know, some things are just, you know, do just happen. Some cancers you can't control, but there are cancers that you can't control through eating and diet. So that's just something that I wanted to talk on right there is, you know, these studies are out here for us and it's up to us to go and read these studies. We really need a wake-up call within the community. And I believe, you know, if people go and check out this article, you'll definitely, I would hope that it's an eye-opener for you. I would hope that it is.
Ashe, can you give the website again for the article?
Absolutely. It's on CBS News, so it's www.cbsnews.com/news/win, and now there's about to be a bunch of hyphens. So /win-health-care-is-equal-black-fair-better-whites/. And then on my Facebook page, I'll repost it, and if you want to share it from my page, you can definitely reshare it. That's just something that really stuck with on my mind. This article came out 4 days ago, so I had read up on it, and I actually went to my uncle's church and shared it with some of the members in the church. Like, hey, you know, we're leading in a lot of things right here. Most of the church is predominantly African American church here in Odessa, Texas. And I let them know, you know, we're not doing well. We're not doing well. And actually, one of the people from the church is who I'm meeting today. That's why I have to leave early. They're ready to sign, and he's ready to change his life around. And let me give him a shout out, Ed Christian, out here in Odessa, Texas. He's ready to work out and start dropping the weight and get off the blood pressure medications and things like that. He's got, what, 4 grandchildren to live for, so he has every reason to begin a healthy lifestyle. Another article that I ran across based on the health was from on the blacklist.net, and this was 12 things that black people do today that they learned during slavery. And one of the things, and there's a lot of stuff that we learned, but one of the things that it touched on was our the diet that our ancestors used during slavery. And the picture of the food is the candy yams or the sweet potatoes socked up in butter, and the collard greens with the fat back and the different seasonings in there. And then the main portion on the plate is the chitlin. This is the recipe for disaster. There is nothing good about anything on the plate like that. And let me say that again. This is a recipe for disaster. You know, sweet potatoes, they're good. They're great. But you can throw coconut oil or olive oil on it and have a little cinnamon or something on it. With your greens, you know, they're cooked in bacon or bacon fat sometimes. And then some, I know people I know, they use bouillon. They cook with bouillon. If you look at one of those little chicken bouillon cubes, that's about 1,100 milligrams of sodium per cube. And I know they're dropping about 4 or 5 cubes in a pot just to get that season down. And then chitlins, I can't get with them. Anything, you know, that you eat from an animal that, you know, where they pass food, I don't care how much you clean them. To me, that is still where they pass the flop that they've been eating at the farm, and then we go and eat their insides. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is something that is learned, and that is something that we have to stop, especially during this season. We are now officially, we've been in it, but we are now officially starting the holiday season. So here we go. We got the 2 biggest holidays of the year, I would say economically, Thanksgiving, and then, of course, the biggest one is Christmas, which, honestly, people, I hope you go out there and buy absolutely nothing. I will be buying one thing, and that's because my son was born on December 26th. I will be getting him something. He'll be 1. So that's the money I'll be spending. Other than that, this holiday, I challenge you. I challenge you for this holiday season to look up a healthy recipe, to cook something healthy for the entire family, to where, you know, we're eating, and we balance out our portions, and we put our forks down while we chew our food, and I challenge everybody to do something different, do something new. Let's not just go to the traditional, plates like this, the get-together food, and we let it all hang out. That's one thing. My family, they don't do it anymore. During Christmas time, my mother, she lives in Dallas. She would come down, and my uncle, oh, okay, you're going to make some chitlins? And I'd just be like, God, come on, guys. Like, no, you guys need to stop eating chitlins. And my uncle and my mom, they're relatively young. I'm going to say they're young in case they're listening. They're young, and I would hate when I saw them eating like that. It was, you know, the salt, the sodium, and the extra hot sauce and the extra gravy. And it's just so this holiday season, do something new for your life, all right? Try something new. Eat to live. Don't live to eat.
Ashe, great points, great articles, and thank you so much for bringing those forward. The first part about the socioeconomics, there's really nothing that should prevent us from eating better so that we can do better. I know that, you know, some of us are fixed incomes, and but that would cause us to, that should cause us to be a little creative, as Sister Isis talked about last week, about us pooling together our resources and buying things in bulk that are good for us. So, you know, that's an option that we need to look at. And there's nothing preventing us from pooling food stamps and, you know, collectively buying certain things and then dividing them up depending on who wants to be a part of the collective. So there's all kinds of creative things that, that folks can do. And what I'd like to do with you, Brother Malachi, is over the next maybe 2 weeks or so, put together a basic soul food menu with options for folks for the holidays, because sometimes people will say, you know, well, you know, I, this is how I do it. This is how my grandmother did it. This is how my mama did it. And this is how, I've been raised to do this. But, you know, that's an excuse, not a real reason. And so if we give them some resources and some options, even maybe, you know, help find some alternative recipes to some of the things that, that folks like, you know, you're right. You can be creative about how you fix your greens. You can be creative about how you eat your yams. You know, they don't have to be drowning in syrup in order to be good. And definitely, you know, having that high kick and saturated sugars is not good for the body anyway. But it tastes good. So as long as we can make it taste good, I think people will have a better, I guess, a risk, if you will, for better health, you know, at trying it, as long as it tastes good. So, let's you know, when I work together over the next few weeks and put together a soul food menu over the next holidays, and just continue to send it to people and post it on Facebook and social media or wherever, so people know, you know, we love them and we want them around as long as possible. Those statistics on heart disease, you know, I told you last week that my mom, you know, passed away from heart disease, and my daddy was waiting on a kidney transplant, you know, as a result of his diabetes. So, you know, I definitely want to do better for not only myself, but for, you know, my children and my children's children. And I'm sure that there are other people who are just like me who are out here that want to do better, but maybe just don't know how. So if you would, you know, if you would accept my help to do so, let's put together a soul food menu and see what we can come up with.
Absolutely. That way, you know, we give the people something. And, you know, people aren't necessarily going to go look up this information. Like you said, well, my mom or my grandma made it this way. So then, therefore, there's no other recipe for how to make it. And that is true. We get stuck on things like that. But absolutely, I would love to work together to put something like that for a family to try something new. So like I said last week, so we don't have to visit those loved ones as possible due to health-related issues that are from diet and lack of exercise. So absolutely, I accept that that challenge and that task, and I'm looking forward to getting down to it.
Okay. I have some other ideas, too, come to mind since last week's conversation. And, you know, I'm doing well, you know, getting adjusted to the water. I feel a lot better just in a week's time from drinking, you know, as close to a gallon of water a day as I possibly could. I told you about my little incident with my daughter.
Yeah.
I must have had a little the first couple of days. So, yeah, but it's getting better. It's getting easier. And now I taste a sweet drink, and I had grape juice yesterday. And even though it was 100% grape juice, it still tasted really, really sweet, because I guess my taste buds have started to change even, you know, in the past 7 days. So if folks try, you know, with just doing one or two things at a time, they'll get to the point, I think, where they start to crave it. I actually want water now. Like, I really want to drink some water. Like, and that would be, like, last on my list of things to drink up until, you know, we had that in-depth conversation last week and decided to take on the challenge, not only just, you know, putting it out here on Blog Talk, but to, you know, take on the 90 days of action to work on ourselves. And so, you know, I just wanted to thank you for, you know, taking the time to be a part of the New Power Radio Network and signing the times. you know, as the university, because we need that education. We really, really do.
Absolutely. I'm glad you took the challenge on. And I understand how you feel. Like, water is my favorite beverage. We go out to eat. Oh, what would you like? I'll bring me some water, and I'll take a lemon, you know, anywhere I'm going. And I'm glad that you're really doing it. And you'll see that weight come off. There's a young lady on my Facebook page. I posted her a shout-out. She had hit me up on Facebook. She lives in my city. And I didn't charge her or anything like that. I'm not going to charge for if you want to start a healthy lifestyle and you don't know where to start and you have a question, inbox me. It is fine. I will not turn you away because you can't pay me a sum. Health is for everyone. It's not exclusive to anyone in my eyes. So if you need something like that, I'll definitely help you. But this young lady, in four weeks, she lost 10 pounds, and she had been drinking water, and she changed her diet up. She sent me the result pictures. I posted them on my Facebook. And this is without her even stepping foot in a gym or, as far as I know, doing any exercise, any vigorous activity outside of her home. This was all just from her switching her diet. 10 pounds, just like that. And so it's very possible. 10 pounds can be a difference from you being healthy and type 2 diabetes. So there's a lot of health benefits from it, from dropping pounds of fat and getting healthy and putting that water back in your body. She was someone who told me she didn't drink a lot of water. She was drinking soda and drinking juice and drinking tea. And that's a lot of us do. You know, we want something that tastes good. Well, what do you want to drink? You know, we're always going for something that tastes good as opposed to water. But when she switched it up, she's seen it. And now I'm actually, since I know that she's staying on track, I'm going to help her out even more because I know that I'm not wasting my time and somebody's actually, you know, doing what they were recommended to do. And that just, let me tell you guys this, when you get a trainer, and your trainer asks you to do something or tells you what you need to do for your specific goal, and you stay on that, your trainer is going to be the happiest person in the world, and they will continue to do for you because you're really serious about what you want to do and what you got going on. When you go to a trainer and you mosey along through the motions, especially if a trainer really, I don't want to say, some trainers do take their job seriously, but I take mine seriously to the point to where if I have a client and they're telling me they're not doing their diet and they're not doing this and they're not doing that, I'm gonna sit back and I'm just gonna be like, and there'll come a point in time where you'll come to sign up for personal training again, and I'll say, I can't accept your money because I feel like I'm just stealing from you because you're not doing everything that you need to do. So do everything you need to do that your trainer gives you, that a fitness expert gives you something to do. Of course, check credentials and things like that, and look it up for yourself as well. Don't just take word for it. You do need to research these things by yourself, but stay on what your trainer tells you to do. They'll make your trainer the happiest person in the world, and they'll make you feel better. And that's all I have to say about that.
Ashe. Okay, so let me ask you this quick question, and then we're going to go ahead and close out at the 45-minute mark. But okay, so if people are interested in just doing some basic exercises or, want to become more active, is there like a minimum, you know, set that folks can do? What if they're sedentary? How do you get moving if you, you know, are limited with what you can do physically?
All right. If you're sedentary and you're just coming back, it's been I consider sedentary to be 6 months and longer, because if you know when you work out, if you don't work out for a span of about 2 weeks, depending on how much shape you were already in, you will lose it all. You will lose most of it, and you won't be where you were at. And so those are things that really do happen. But if you're sedentary, the one thing I would recommend starting out at is start with stretching. Don't do anything. Oh well, I'll go into that further. Start with stretching. Start stretching your hamstrings, your calves. Usually, I give a fitness assessment, and if you don't have anyone to give you a fitness assessment, start looking up stretches for your calves, for your shin muscle, for your quadriceps, the muscle on the front of your leg, for your hamstrings on the back of your leg. Start looking up stretches for every body part and begin to stretch. Now, how you stretch, you want to do 3 sets, and you want to hold each body part for 30 seconds. I have my clients hold it for 30 seconds to get a good stretch. Now, from right there, if you're sedentary, you can just get up. Once you're done with your stretching, start taking a walk. Start off with walking. Especially, you know, being sedentary, it's going to be hard to get back into a full-blown out, you know, I'm going jogging, going sprinting. Start off with that, but track your progress every week. Time yourself. If you say, okay, I'm going to go walk a mile, see how long it takes you to walk a mile. If it takes you 15 minutes to walk a mile, somewhere around there, if it takes you 15 minutes next week, let's shoot for 14 minutes and 30 seconds. Let's shave 30 seconds off each week or each day, you know, if we can. Let's try to pick it up like that. Now, if you're someone who, you know, who's been sedentary, but, you know, a little more able-bodied at the moment, if you don't have a gym membership, you can start at home. There's nothing like push-ups, bodyweight squats. You have sit-ups. You have crunches. You can lay on your stomach, and you can work your back out doing prone workouts of Cobra. You'd have to look that up on Google or some or whichever search engine. But you can start out like that as well. So you don't necessarily need to go into a gym to have a health plan. Those monkey bars at the gym, at the playground, go out to those monkey bars and start doing pull-ups. You can do them close grip. You can do them wide grip. So there are, you know, different things that you can do. You can go out in the grass. You can do bear crawls. You can do log rolls. You know, so there's a lot of stuff you can do outside of the gym to get in shape. So those would be my suggestions to them. But also, always have a timer with you. Have a watch with you. So if you take a rest break, you're not guessing how long your rest is. Oh, yeah, that's about 30 seconds. Let me hop back in it. When in reality, you took like a 15-second break when you need 30 seconds to recover. Or in the end, you're trying to go for 30 seconds in your head, and you end up taking a minute or a minute and a half break when your goal requires you only a 30-second break. So keep a clock with you. Write your goals down. Start out slow. If you're just getting back up off the couch, start stretching. Start walking. If you're semi already going, start with the body weight exercises. Run it like a circuit. Really work yourself. Tire yourself out. You don't have anything to lose. You have absolutely nothing to lose. You have everything to gain when it comes to working out and changing your lifestyle.
Ashe. Well, everybody, we're going to have a short broadcast tonight. We thank you, Brother Malachi, for your time, and we wish the brother that you're starting with tonight the best of luck, and let him know that he's welcome to come on Sign of the Times and let us know how well he's doing with his routine and what progress that he's making. And I'm definitely going to keep the listeners posted on the progress that I'm making. I feel a lot better, y'all. And I'm telling you, it's only been a week. So thank you again, Brother Malachi. Please remind folks how they can get in contact with you.
You can find me on my Facebook. My name is Joseph Gerdine Knighton, Gerdine hyphen Knighten. You can find me on there. You can also go search for my Facebook page, Inner Fabric. That's the name of my personal training company. Inner Fabric. So you can also hit me up on there. And also, one more page, you can hit up Black Thumb Communion. It's a community page out here in Odessa, but we do post different things that are going on in the community, in the world, and we touch on health a lot. That's one thing I'm trying to get, you know, the people to pick up on, is we have to not only pay attention to who's been shot or, you know, what celebrity is doing this or what's new on this episode of Empire, but we need to pay attention to our health as well.
Ashe. All right, y'all. Y'all got it here first. This is week two of the week of action, and we have to start with ourselves first. So, Brother Malachi, we appreciate your time tonight. Tomorrow night, we will be focusing on Cincinnati, talking to some brothers here, Brother OJ and Brother T-Bone, who are well versed in the politics and the political games that are going on here in Cincinnati and aren't afraid to talk about it. So with that being said, Brother Malachi, peace out. Send the brother I love, and we'll be back next week, y'all, with the University here on New Power Radio Network. We'll see you then. Peace.
This is why I say it's the ballot or the bullet. It's liberty or it's death. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody. America today finds herself in a unique situation. Historically, revolutions are bloody. Oh, yes, they are. They have never had a bloodless revolution or a nonviolent revolution. That don't happen even in Hollywood. You don't have a revolution in which you love your enemy. And you don't have a revolution in which you are begging the system of exploitation to integrate you into it. Revolutions overturn systems. Revolutions destroy systems. A revolution is bloody. But America is in a unique position. She's the only country in history in a position actually to become involved in a bloodless revolution. The Russian Revolution was bloody. Chinese Revolution was bloody. French Revolution was bloody. Cuban Revolution was bloody. And there was nothing more bloody than the American Revolution. But today, this country can become involved in a revolution that won't take bloodshed. All she's got to do is give the black man in this country everything that's doing. Everything. I hope that the white man can see this. Because if you don't see it, you're finished. If you don't see it, you're going to become involved in some action in which you don't have a chance. We don't care anything about your atomic bomb. It's useless. Because other countries have atomic bombs. When two or three different countries have atomic bombs, nobody can use it. So it means that the white man today is without a weapon. If you want some action, you got to come on down to earth. And there's more black people on earth than there are white people. I only got a couple more minutes. The white man can never win another war on the ground. His days of war victory, his days of background victory are over. Can I prove it? Yes. Take all the action that's going on this earth right now that he's involved in. Tell me where he's winning. Nowhere. Why, some rice eaters ran him out of Korea. Yes, they ran him out of Korea. Rice eaters with nothing but gym shoes and a rifle and a bowl of rice. Took him and his tanks and his napalm and all that other action he's supposed to have and ran him across the Yalu. Why? Because the day that he can win on the ground is past. Up in French Indochina, those little peasants, rice growers, took on the might of the French army and ran all the Frenchmen. You remember Dien Bien Phu? No! The same thing happened in Algeria, in Africa. They didn't have anything but a rifle. The French had all these highly mechanized instruments of warfare. But they put some guerrilla action on. And a white man can't fight a guerrilla warfare. Guerrilla action takes heart, takes nerve, and he doesn't have that.